Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Nice to have everybody with us this morning. Pick up the phone, give us a call, 877-213-4LU. Labor Day weekend. Boy, that was quick. A quick summer. I know, Lindsay, your girls are back at school already, and a lot of kids are heading back. And I was it's funny to me that so many had Friday off. That's Labor Day weekend. I could take Friday off, too. A lot of kids and friends of mine who have young kids said that school is already out. So that's a good deal. Hopefully they had a nice long weekend and getting back into things this morning.
They gave you an extra day off, and they said, but by the way, don't travel
anywhere. Don't go anywhere.
Stay right. Still for an extra
right.
day.
Right, exactly. Just go out in the backyard.
Back.
We
feel like all of you haven't had enough time to spend at home lately. So here's another day.
Right. Does it? Yeah. My youngest son, Max, is going back to college. He's going to be a junior. And he goes back on Monday, on Labor Day. You know, he moves in, so we're going to move him in. And you all will, you know, you're all young enough, you and Lindsay and Don and Joe, to remember this point, you know, when you're, like, in the middle of college, and his time at home has expired, as well as, and that's both ways.
I was going to say.
In other words, it's not just on our side. Right, you know, it's right. His mother and father, like, okay, you need to go. He's like that with us, too. You know, I can see
for
it.
Sure.
You know, and not only can I see it, I can hear it.
Right. The tone.
So it'll be like, have a good one. We'll see you at Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.
You know you're in college when you're counting down the days for school to start again.
Oh, my gosh. It's so hard. Right? I mean, it's hard on everybody. But, you know, of course, we'll miss him when he goes. Not right. Really. No, we will. 877-2134-LU. Let's get things started this morning, and let's hit the phone lines. This is Tom calling in from Rockaway, New Jersey. Tom, good morning. You're on House Smarts Radio.
Good morning,
Lou.
How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing well.
Lou, I have a question on crank-out windows, like the kitchen window. When you unlatch it and the initial crank, it sticks a little bit. Is there any way to stop that from the initial stick when you first open the window?
It's a casement window or an awning window. In other words, is it when I look at the window, is it a vertical rectangle or a horizontal rectangle?
It's a vertical rectangle.
Okay.
It's a tall window. Yes.
Okay. Now, more than likely, it's that initial stick is the fact that the and is it a one other question too, Tom? Is it a it's a wood window?
Yes, it's a wood window.
And is it first floor or second floor?
This is first floor.
All right. So when you're outside, I want you to open up the window, and I want you to take a look at the edge of the frame of the window. You may need a ladder, mm-hmm. but in particular, I bet that on the bottom edge of this window, you're going to see a little like rub mark where the frame of the window, the sash of the window rather, is hitting against the opening. And so that initial stick is that it's, you know, it's pitched a little bit. It's sagging because it's an older window, right? And
okay.
If you go ahead.
It's about 30 years old. Is that considered old?
That's old. I mean, it's not old. If you and I were 30, we'd be looking good. But if for a window, it's old. If you notice and you find that rubbing area, I want you to just take a sanding sponge, a medium grit sanding sponge, or sandpaper if you have it, and lightly sand the sash a little bit. We're just trying to take an eighth of an inch, not even an eighth of an inch, a 16th of an inch. I had this same issue in a home that we have with awning windows where they stick. And they, you know, the wood swells. In particular, there's been a lot of, obviously, rain and moisture in the Northeast. And a lot of that, it swells. And if you just do that little edge, it won't really affect anything in the wintertime, as long as you don't do anything with the weather stripping. But if you clean that up a little bit, I think you will find you get that window to work no problem.
That sounds good, Lou. I'll give that a shot. Great.
You got it, Tom. I appreciate you calling this morning. 877-2134-LOU. You know, quick observation, obviously, about all the rain and the flooding. We may get some calls about that today. But you know, as things start to subside and you start to clean up, I realize it can be daunting. I've been through this myself personally a couple of times, and you just want to be super careful. If there is still water down in the basement, wait till it gets out of there. And because if there are plugs, receptacles down low, we don't want to enter that basement. If there's still electrical power there, you may have to call the utility to come and kill the power if it's not already to the home. A furnace, a water heater that was submerged in water has to be replaced. The devices, potentially even the wiring, would have to be replaced if there wasn't severe damage on the walls and places like that. That is just, it is going to be a daunting task. And, you know, your homeowner's insurance, if it covers it, is only because you had a rider on there potentially. And it's a huge mess. And my heart goes out to all of you that went through this. Just remember, it's just stuff. And as long as everybody's healthy and safe, that's the most important thing. But, you know, if you have questions about that, cleaners, that kind of stuff, I'm happy to help with that as well. 877-213-4LOU, 877-213-4568. We will take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this. Did you see the movie, what was the movie about Facebook?
With Social Network.
Social Network. Remember when remember he was calling it The Facebook?
Yeah,
at
that's
first it was
right
The Facebook, yeah, right. And then Justin Timberlake, who played the guy from Napster, goes, just call it Facebook. It sounds cooler. So instead of booking it, you just say booking. It's the slang of the slang.
Totally.
Did your dog catch the reference when you said you're booking it?
No, he's a dumb dog.
He hasn't seen Facebook, the Social Network.
He's just
either.
A dog. He's just a dog booking it. I'm telling
what else can you teach us?
I'll teach you kids some. Pretty soon we'll do some World War II history. 877-213 and the failures of that. No, anyway. 877-213-4LOU. 877-213-4568. This is Greta in Bergen County. Hi, Greta. Good morning.
Good morning, Lou. Thank you for taking the call.
How may I help you?
I have mildew on an outside painted porch ceiling. And I believe there must be a spray.
There is. Normally, I would tell you that I want you to use wet and forget. But the fact that it's a porch ceiling, we're not going to get any. It really works with the rain and the wind. And so it is not going to be as effective for you in that situation. How big of an area are we talking about up there, Greta?
Oh, golly. It's not on the whole ceiling.
Oh, okay. So
strangely, there was a different kind of paint on part of it, and that did not get mildew.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, it had mildew preventive in the paint, which is possible.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's even an additive that you can put that Rust-Oleum makes, a mildicide additive, if you ever do any exterior painting in the future, that I would definitely do.
Uh-huh.
But this is the product I want you to buy.
You asked about the size. It's probably, 10 feet by 12 feet.
Okay. And are you going to apply this spray?
I cannot get up on a ladder, no.
Okay.
It's 8 feet high.
Okay. Then I want you to buy a product called Concrobium Mold Control.
Okay.
C-O-N-C-R-O-B-I-U-M. Correct. And it will, now you can buy that in a little quart spray bottle, or you can buy it in a gallon. I bet a quart spray bottle will be plenty. Whomever is going to get up on that ladder, and you're going to spray this, and you're going to get it wet, not dripping wet, but you're going to spray it like you'd be spraying flowers with a bug spray to keep the bugs off of it. And then you're going to let it dry. It will kill the mildew almost immediately. And
oh, wonderful.
But the discoloration, once it dries, have, again, whomever, go up there with a nylon bristled brush and brush it all off. And you probably will get it all off. And then if they spray it again, now that it's clean, there's residual value with the product that will help assist the mildew from not coming back.
And can I paint again on top of that?
Yeah. So if you're gonna repaint, then what is that your plan to repaint?
Well, I don't know what it will look like.
Okay, so if the staining does not come off, okay, but the mold will be killed, okay, so that you don't have to worry about. Lightly sand the area, and then if you repaint it, choose a paint that either has a built-in mildecide, an exterior paint that has that, which most do, or, as I mentioned, Rust-Oleum has an additive that's a mildecide additive that you can add to any exterior latex paint or even oil-based paint that will enhance the ability of the paint to repel the mildew and mold.
Okay, good. I thank you. Might I ask you another question, please?
Of course, sure.
On that same porch ceiling, I had a fan installed, and the electrician did not install it all the way up to the ceiling, so there's a quarter-inch space. And I'm afraid, I don't know, bugs can crawl in there, spiders.
Oh, you mean the actual housing of the fan itself, where it's mounted to the ceiling?
Yes.
I mean, sure, they can crawl in there, but they can crawl in anywhere. There's plenty of gaps in a device like that. So, I mean, if it's visually bothering you, then perhaps when whomever you have do this cleaning and ultimately painting, they could do some a quick bead of caulking around it just to give you a visual seal. But it's really not it's not stopping any bugs, meaning that they can still get into other areas. But they can put a if it's a white fan, they can put a little white acrylic caulk around there to just give you a nice visual line that will cosmetically look a lot better and ultimately keep bugs from getting in there. But they could get in other places too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you ever so much.
You're welcome. I appreciate you calling. By the way, our first caller and now our second caller is sponsored by bathfitter.com/Lou. I missed it. It's the holiday weekend. Let's keep going and see who we can help this morning. This is Sherry, who's calling in from Jersey City. Hi, Sherry. You're on HouseSmarts Radio.
Hi, yes. Good morning, Lou. I love your show. I listen all the time. Thank you for your helping others.
And, my and pleasure. You thank you.
I appreciate your comments with the flood. I'm a victim of the flood, but it's a very strange thing. I had three sump pumps, but my water, the first storm, Henri, I had a professional, contractor install a basement door from the back. Basement to the backyard. I'm in a brownstone mm-hmm. brick row house style
yep.
house.
Yep.
And it literally broke the door right off the frame, the pressure of the water that built up in the well. And I have a good drain that I put in from the plumber. So I broke it off. I had a second handyman. I had a handyman come to hang it up with a new frame. And this last storm, Wednesday, well, it's up at Ida, it just poured in around the frame, and I got more water than Henri. What kind of frame, or do I need insulation? Originally, when it was put in, some can insulation was used around the frame, but is there any way, it was pouring in through the door frame.
Yeah.
Is there any way to seal the door frame properly, or should it be metal? Should it be wood? Should I use insulation?
So here's the issue with that, Sherry, is that this kind of monumental water, I mean, and that's really what it is, right? There is no pump or there is no door frame that can keep this water out. In other words, you would have to put in a door that's like on a ship, right, that you're running between, right, with the big huge wheel in the middle of it that seals it all up. And I mean, okay, the reality of it is that even what I'm going to suggest may not work because of the amount of water. I mean, the images that I have seen and you have seen and it sounds like you have experienced as well, it's just, it's as if someone just dropped your home into the ocean, right? I mean, it's just, that's it. But what I would really pay attention to is the topography of your yard in relationship to the neighbors and where that water flows. I mentioned I've been through floods many times in different capacities, and years ago, my brother-in-law's home had a terrible flood, terrible rains. It was a February rain where the ground was frozen, and he had a basement door like you, and the water was just coming in. It was as if, you opened up a dike to come in through there. And the only way we stopped the water is we spent hours with shovels in the backyard, like building berms and trying to channel the water to go other places when it comes in. So if you're fortunate enough to have space to do that yes, you can channel the water. I would hire a landscape contractor that has experience doing that and create a pathway to drive the water around your home and potentially to the street. But again, we're talking about monumental water. If the street fills up, well, there's just nowhere for this water to go. And
I was even in the backyard. It's the backyard, and it's Belgium blocked and a cement quarter patio. I was thinking like sandbags or put a vinyl fence around the steps that go down to the door.
Right.
Brownstone.
But
put a vinyl fence, square it in, and a gate, and try to keep the water that way.
But that being said, under normal conditions, quote, and I put that in quote, it probably works. In what we just experienced, nothing will work. And I mean, my heart goes out to everybody that has been through this. And it's just so much water that unless you're building and living in a ship, there's no way you're going to keep the water up. Thank you so much for the phone call. We are bumping up against time. We need to take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Lou.
Morning.
Good morning. I am calling you about my back deck. I had a well-intended friend come over and was going to help me sand my deck because it has a it's a brownish red. I've always had a Rymar semi-transparent oil-based stain on it, and there were some little dents and things throughout the deck, little splits of wood, but all over the wood is in good condition. And he put in a product that is called Minwax, which he thought was a stainable product. And my deck right now has vanilla spots all over my 20-by-20-foot deck because this Minwax is a color that is a vanilla compared to a sienna brown. And I am just...
Beside yourself. Okay, wait. I'm gonna stop you a second. You said, so in other words, they put in some type of crack filler, a Minwax crack filler?
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's not intended for exterior. It's really more for an interior. It's everywhere?
Yes. Let's put it this way. Of the deck, it's on probably about 60% of the deck in random places.
Okay. So let's do this. You probably will be, and this has been done in the last couple weeks?
Yes, it was done just this week.
Okay. Do you own a pressure washer?
I do. It's not a high volume. It's a small pressure washer, and I've used the...
I think you'll be fine. And I would go back where all of this is, and you should be able to blast that out of there. Because here's the reality of it is, I wouldn't have advised you to do any of that because the wood is going to expand and contract. And that crack, it's the wrong product for what you're using it for. And B, it was going to come out anyway. And I think that before this thing really cures, after about 30 days, if you go at it with the pressure washer and are deliberate to where this is, I bet you'll blow it all out. And then once you do go ahead.
What I'm afraid to do, because when I did pressure wash the first time in preparation for him coming to prepare the deck, some of the wood would start to splinter off in random places where the power washer hit.
Well... And in reality, that will probably occur again. But you have to get this filler out because it will not accept the stain. And even if you said, "Well, I'm just going to do it," whatever, you'll be calling me back in the spring, going, "It's all coming out." So, better to dig in now, remove it all, resand those spots. Okay. Do not fill the cracks and restain it, and that's it. And your well-intentioned friend is just a lovely person, and you're so appreciative to all of their help.
Oh, my gosh. I have been, going to all different paint stores because the current stain that I have, the semi-transparent, won't cover that. So I was going to ask you if I could just
No. You will be so disappointed if you go with a solid color. Here, I just want to be very clear about this. If whatever you put on there, that stuff will come out. It will be, you will redo this in the spring. So better to just go at it now, bite the bullet, and fix it, and then go.
What he did was he put this stuff on top of the top of nail heads.
It'll all come off with the pressure washer. It'll all come off. I promise you.
It will?
Yes. I know you don't want to. Here's the thing. And your friend just helped you, right? It's not like you paid your friend. Right?
Well, a little, but yeah.
Oh, you did? Oh, well, here's the thing. You never work with family and friends. And if your friend is helping you, right, the other rule is you can't yell at the free help. But evidently you paid your friend a little. Now you're going to have to pay your friend a little more to fix it. I know it's not what you want to hear, Elaine, but that's what you have to do.
Okay. So the nicks and things in the deck that were kind of like splintering wood.
You're going to sand all that down and get it as smooth as possible. And then when you go with the semi-transparent stain over the top of that, it'll blend it all together.
Okay, because this whole deck has been sanded.
Right. You're going to have to sand it again.
Lou, is there anybody professional that could help me with this?
You're in Frankfort, Illinois?
Yes, uh-huh.
Called Deck Tech. DECKTECH. 800-956-DECK in the Chicagoland area.
Okay, Lou.
Call them and see if they can help you out. I'm sorry. I know that sometimes the advice is not what people want to hear, but, and this is the contractor where I put that hat on, you know? Like, if I'm doing this work and I screwed it up, you just got to turn around and fix it, because when I leave, I don't want you, you know, complaining about it. And you are going to create more work for yourself if you don't do it the right way. So that's why sometimes people will call and be like, I want to do this. I'm like, well, I don't want you to do that, because it's going to, a year from now, it's not going to look good. And then you're going to be sad. Take more time, fix it, do it right, and then enjoy. 877-213-4-LOU, House Smarts Radio with me, Lou Manfredini. We'll take a quick break and be back after this. This is Marcel in New Jersey. Hey, Marcel. Do I have Marcel?
No, this is Frank, too.
Oh, hey, Frank. I'm sorry. How may I help you, sir?
Yes. Hi, Lou. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good.
I called you before, and you've been very helpful. So I have a question. I just purchased a home in Florida, Southwest Florida, and I'm living in Long Island now. But I put in a new AC system because I was advised. The other one was old, and they run 24/7. It's very humid down there.
Yeah.
And the air conditioner is running fine. It's cooling the house. But I've noticed I've got a lot of condensation on the top of the AC. So I called back the AC company, and they replaced the plenum. And this has been 3 or 4 times. They finally replaced the plenum, and the condensation has stopped to a certain extent, but it's still a little wet on the top of the air handler. So my question is, I'm being advised maybe I should insulate the garage because the handler is in the garage in a vertical position.
Okay, hold on. That's what I was going to ask you. So the unit is in the garage.
Correct. The air handler, all the homes down there, the garage is attached to the house, but the air handler is in the garage. Mm-hmm. And it's very humid in the garage, mm-hmm. and it seems that the top of the air conditioner is cold and you get moisture on there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was getting quite a bit, a puddle, and then they told me the plenum was leaking, which we replaced. And I noticed now there's just a little moisture coming from there, and they told me if I insulated the garage, that might help. So I'm not sure about that.
Before we insulate the garage, let me ask you this. So did you say that the air handler, it pumps the air out vertically or horizontally?
Well, the air handler is it's standing straight, so it's vertical. The plenum comes down from the attic. The air ducts run from the attic throughout the house.
Got it. Okay, and so when I'm looking, so it's pumping up into the attic of the garage and then being distributed throughout the home.
And then the condenser is outside.
Correct.
And it's draining very well.
Okay, but now the ductwork that I see in the garage above the air handler, is that ductwork insulated or uninsulated?
I'm not 100% sure. I think it is insulated. But
if I'm looking on the when I'm looking at the outside of the ductwork, I mean, it could be insulated ductwork, but is it metal that I'm looking at?
It's metal, but it's covered with, they put like a tape around it. It's kind of after they put the plaster on it.
Oh, okay. So it has some kind of plaster over the cover.
Yes, it's metal, but they plaster it around, and then they put like a tape. The tape they call it, but they tape the plenum, and the plenum has stopped leaking. There were a few holes in there, they said, but now I noticed I'm just getting a little condensation, but with the old AC, I never had condensation on the top, so that's what makes
so
me
this,
think that,
so,
I don't know.
So insulating the garage itself is a lot more than you need to do, because exactly what's it's a physics thing, right? You got all this cold, it's hot inside the garage. I mean, if you opened up the garage door and you put a box fan and you blew it on the thing, you wouldn't have condensation. But who's going to do that, especially when you're not there? What you could if this is in a corner, what may make more sense is to build a closet around it with a door and insulate that.
Yeah, that might be something that could be done, because it is in the corner. It's on kind of a shelf. It's
correct. So then we insulate that space that's in there. The thing is, even when you insulate the garage, it's still going to be hot in the garage, and it's still going to hold the heat in the garage. And so that's going to be problematic for you, you know, long term. It's not like insulating the garage is going to cool it. It's not. It's still going to be 90 degrees or 100 degrees in there, and you've got the AC running. If you build a closet around it with a few studs and some insulate and drywall that, well, now the temperature inside that closet is a little cooler, right? Because the air handler just inherently is, you know, it's cooling that space, and the condensation will go away. Just make sure if you do this that the door or the access that you create is big enough to allow the heating and cooling people to come in and service the thing.
Right. I understand. Yeah, that's a good idea. I know that since they replaced the plenum, the condensation is almost completely gone, but there's still a little there.
Yeah, I would build a closet around it and insulate it, and I think you'll solve that problem. I appreciate the phone call, 877-213-4-LOU. We need to take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this. The Today Show replayed the outdoor lighting segment. You know, during the summer, they do some reruns. Lindsay helped me with a Today Show spot where we did some outdoor lighting. We even interviewed the guy from Gamma Sonic, this outdoor lighting thing. And I made a comment when I was talking to the hosts, to Hoda and Jenna, and I said, oh, these lights, the string lights, I go, I just moved my daughter down to New Orleans, and I hung these lights for her, and they ran the week after the storm. And all these people were like, I hope your daughter's okay, you mentioned, and that's so sweet that people would think that. So thank you. You are all amazing, and I so appreciate that. I really do.
Somebody on the text line just said some 10 minutes ago.
Really?
630. Lou, I was thinking about your daughter in New Orleans.
That's so nice.
Hope she's doing well.
Yeah, aww. So nice. So I really do. We you know, we say this a lot here at WGN Radio, and I have to tell you that anybody that talks on this radio station, and even the people that you don't hear, realize the importance of who you are, the listener, and we so appreciate it. And we like to have some fun and joke around, and I mention this all the time, that GN... listeners take ownership in the station because it's you, and you know, we our tagline may be the voice of Chicago, but we are I believe that. I truly believe that. And we're only the voice of Chicago because of you. So thank you for caring, and that's really, really kind of you. Thank you. 877-213-4LOU. How about our next caller, Lindsay? We give him a House Smarts radio hat sponsored by Cobblestone Remodeling. Whether you're renovating your kitchen or bathroom, Cobblestone Remodeling's team of award-winning designers can help create your vision. Visit cobblestoneremodeling.com or give them a call at 773-661-0606. We're going to send that hat out to Don in Cary. Hey, Don, good morning. You're on House Smarts Radio.
Good morning, Lou. I'm very excited to talk to you. I've been listening to you for years.
Thank you. How may I help you, sir?
Our family owns a summer home in Indiana that was built in the mid-1930s. And it's still got the original front door and still has the original key to the front door. And for the life of me, I can't find anyone who can make me a key. And it looks normal to me, but I was hoping, since you own hardware stores, maybe you know somebody who can make old keys.
Is it, when you say, I mean, what's, it looks like a normal key, like a, like the house you live in, not in Indiana? Or does it, is
correct.
It, is the, yeah. Is the blank,
it's just,
are
it's
they
normal, t- it's right. Just cut on one side like a normal house key.
Right. And are when you go to like a hardware store locally, do they say there's no blank available?
Correct.
Let me ask you this. When you're not in your summer home in Indiana, what part of the area do you live in?
In Indiana?
Do you live in Indiana or in Illinois?
Oh, Illinois. I live up in Cary.
Up in Cary. Okay. So there is a lock a company called Anderson Lock.
Uh-huh.
And they are in Des Plaines. And
okay.
they are probably the premier lock and key company in the Chicagoland area. And if you went to, you know, if you searched them on Google, you could find it. They actually provide locksmith service where they'll come to you. But this would probably, it's near the airport. It'd probably be worth a conversation. And quite frankly, if they can't make that key, you can't make that key.
Okay.
Right. I mean, that would be
a lock or something.
Well, at that point, they may say, hey, buddy, you know, this is, and you know what might be helpful too? Are you going to be at the Indiana House this weekend?
Yes.
Okay. Take a couple of pictures of, take a picture of the lock on the outside of the door, the inside of the door, and on the jamb of the door. And what I would also do is take some measurements. So if it's, is it just a knob or is there more, is it more pronounced like you have a body of the
lock?
Well,
it's a knob, but then on the inside, you know, on the door jamb, it's got the two little buttons.
Yeah. So take all those pictures and maybe even measure on the door jamb side so you know that, oh, it's 4 inches tall or whatever it is. And then if you go there and they say, sorry, buddy, you need a new lock, they may be able to help you, you know, provide you with a lock that you can purchase from them.
All right, that would be great. Thank you very much.
Have a great week, and I appreciate you listening. That's very kind. Hey, when we come back, I have a Noodaloo 2 that's all about, you know, one of the things with the dogs is, especially when you're training a new dog, they have accidents. And, like, on the carpeting. We've been good. I shouldn't even bring this up. But you just said your dog, Hamilton, was a little sick.
He was a little sick last week.
And has a little boop on the carpet, and then you're like, you're rubbing it, and you're not quite sure how to get it all clean. I got a Noodaloo 2 that's going to help you clean it quickly. And you just like carry this thing around, and it's almost like one of those things that once you get started, you can't stop. You know, the thing is, you do get the bread occasionally with the Seattle Sutton. They'll give you like a, but they limit the bread. Obviously, the carbs are tough. But when you want pasta, you want like a big bowl of Italian bread.
Lucky for me, I'm not complaining, but like I've never been a pasta eater.
Really?
Yes. I mean, I love, there's a ton of other, you know.
You love potatoes. Right?
You always, last time you said you love the bread.
You love,
like, where do you come up with this? I love the potatoes now. Now it's
you're
potatoes.
Like Oprah. Do you love bread? I love bread.
You love bread.
I do love bread. I love
you
bread.
You said that to me.
Do you
and
love
it's
bread?
Not true. I mean, so I'm not like a big bread. I don't. But now this week it's potatoes. So tell me what?
It's like I don't even know you. You don't love the bread? It's
I
like,
love the sweets.
You love the sweets, and you love the salt.
Potato chips, yes.
You love the salt.
Together?
Together, yeah.
Key. Right.
What was the thing when you were pregnant? It was something. It was like you had a weird thing you were eating.
Oh, I had
like
a lot of them.
Was it watermelon and ketchup? No. Was no, it something like that?
No.
It was some. It was. Oh no! It was the French fries in the milkshake.
Oh, that's not pregnant. That's all.
Yeah. Oh, Don's like all. Really? Yeah.
Tell you what, put some whipped cream on a Triscuit cracker, and then and try that one out.
Whipped cream on a Triscuit.
My wife loves the Ready really? Whip. Yeah. She will loves the Ready Whip, like whatever it is. Like she'll squirt a little bit of the Ready. Oh, try this, yeah. Like a little dark chocolate with a little Ready Whip.
Nice.
Don Kleppen changed my life, by the way. I told him this last week. Remember we were talking about peanut butter? I know we're in the Noodaloo too, which is sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. When you need a new ride, you need a new Chevy. But you know, I love the peanut butter. I have my own jar of peanut butter. I take the little spoon. I love it. And Don goes, "You got to try honey and peanut butter."
Oh, that's right.
I'm 57 years old, and Don blew my mind.
Lou, I'm really happy about that, too. But hey, if you want to supercharge that on like a night, sprinkle a little cinnamon on there, on the peanut butter and honey. And
he's like a like a scientist.
I'm telling you. This tastes good. Yeah. Loving him.
Wow. Wait. Peanut butter. So this is what I do. We have these. Remember we did the Noodaloo 2s years ago? We're in the middle of Noodaloo 2. Cali bowls. Remember Cali bowls? Come on.
Yeah.
Cali bowls.
Oh, yeah.
They're like these plastic bowls. They still exist, and we still use them at our home like crazy because when they sent us the samples, it was like a semi showed up at our house. We have so many of these Cali bowls. And the idea behind these bowls are imagine just a plastic bowl like you would have soup or. But there's a lip, like an interior lip. So if you were having cereal and you brought your spoon up, it wouldn't spill over the side. It goes into your spoon, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you take a bite and whatever it is you're eating. So there's these little ones, almost like a little one that, like, what I would imagine if you went to a nail salon and you put your fingers in there to soak in it, right?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right? So I take a little peanut butter, like two or three scoops of the peanut butter in there. And then Don goes, honey. And I took the honey and I drizzled it over the top as like a little treat.
Don calls you honey?
Mm-hmm. Don called me honey.
I do frequently.
Sometimes he calls me my little cinnamon stick. And, well, you know, Don and I have a whole love affair
going
on.
Yeah.
Right, but, right. And then you just take the little spoon and you go, oh. I'm telling you, if you're listening right now, if you haven't stopped listening, try this. It's so good.
It
it's
is
so
great.
Good.
Yeah, I love that. That's a classic.
It's so good.
Here's another one. A little peanut butter. Mixed with a spoonful of a little Nutella together. Very good.
Oh, nice.
Good stuff.
Wow.
And that's your treat for the night. That's it.
Yeah, right. You just can't, can't go crazy. And see, the thing is, too, with peanut butter, you can only eat so much peanut butter.
Right.
You know, I mean, you get to a point where you're like, just one or two scoops and straight peanut butter. But the honey, oh, it like changes the consistency when you're eating it. Mm-hmm. Oh, so good. Hey, our Noodaloo 2 has nothing to do with peanut butter or honey or cinnamon. My little cinnamon stick. Don's like, how you doing, my little cinnamon stick? Hi, Don.
He left.
It's great.
It's right, but there's nobody listening anymore. Our Noodaloo 2, as I mentioned, is sponsored by my friends over at ChevyDriveChicago.com. When you need a new ride, you need a new Chevy. And if you have dirty carpeting and you need to do a quick little spot clean, like immediately because you're freaking out, take a listen.
We all make a little oops once in a while, whether you're a child that missed your mouth while drinking blue Kool-Aid, whether you're a dog that really had to go, or whether you're an adult like my friend Michelle, who missed the sofa and wine flew slow motion, rainbow style across the room. And sometimes these oops make messes and stains that are tough to get up. Well, this week's new Tulu 2 focuses on one of the top portable spot cleaners on the market, the Hoover Power Dash Go Portable Carpet and Upholstery Spot and Stain Cleaner. This spot cleaner is lightweight, portable, and tackles those tough stains and oopsies, whether for your pet or you. If you're cleaning a pet oops, Hoover offers this paws and claws pre-mixed spot cleaning solution that works great. Combine that with the Power Dash Go rubber nub pet tool. If you made an oops, you can use their regular spot and stain remover. Power Dash Go has dual tanks, so it keeps the solution and dirty water separate, so you can easily fill, empty, and rinse. I've read reviews where people have used this thing on upholstery, on carpet, on mattresses, even in their cars.
Its compact design is easy to carry, so you can just grab and go and clean. The Hoover PowerDash Go Portable Spot Cleaner retails for $89.99. Hey, not all of our mistakes can be cleaned up this easy, so take advantage of it when you can. For more information, visit HouseSmartsRadio.com.
That's this week's Noodaloo-Doo.
I love this idea because I think that we all have. Now, I want you always to call Executive Green Carpet Cleaning when you need your carpet and upholstery cleaned. But when you have those quick little messes that you're not quite sure, because many times rubbing it in only makes it worse.
Right.
And with something like this that actually extracts it, it's powerful enough to pull the stain out, makes perfect sense.
And you,
sense.
Like, watch the water. Oh, my gosh. Can you hear the duck clock?
Yeah.
In the background.
Yeah, I do hear that.
David, you can watch the water. As you're cleaning this, you watch the water in the unit get dirty. Like, you can see it actually pulling the...
Which is, I will tell you this right now, your upholstery in particular, you talked about upholstery, your couch and your chairs are so dirty, you have no idea. And if you were to take a machine like this, or if you rented a machine with the upholstery attachment, which I do regularly... We actually own a rug doctor, and so I will clean the upholstery. Mary Beth will say, hey, we got to clean this up. And we have dogs, you know, going up on there. You have kids. And when you go at it, just even if you just did the surface that people are sitting on, you're like, I'm not going to sit on that couch. Gross. This is cool. Go to HouseSmartsRadio.com to learn more. Thank you to my friends over at ChevyDriveChicago.com. 877-213-4LOU, 877-213-4568. This is Pat in Wheaton. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Lou. Quick question. So I'm getting a new roof, so I called one company, and they sent me an estimate, and I just wanted to make sure that I'm not getting taken. So he said the materials for the roof shingles, he gave me, it may be, you know, A, company A, B, the brand of shingles. So I'm wondering, is that normal?
Sure. You started the conversation saying I called one company.
Yeah, one company.
I want more than one company.
Okay.
There's plenty of roofing contractors out there that you can contact that are associated with this radio show and the radio station that are two good ones are Rogers Roofing.
Okay.
And Lindholm Roofing.
Okay.
Both of whom have been in business a very long time, both of whom do very good work, and would be someone to put on your list to at least get an estimate. Now, remember this. They will talk about, first of all, I'm not a big fan of re-roofing. So right. If you haven't had a roof in 25 years, I'd rather you tear it off, spend a little bit more money, make any repairs that have to happen. Maybe there's some gutter work or whatever that has to occur. And, you know, most of them now are quoting architectural shingles, which is a better material. And most will say, oh, you get a 35-year warranty or whatever. That's on the material only. So just keep that in mind, that from the manufacturer. And that's a prorated thing. So you just got to understand that, you know, if 10 years from now there was a problem with the roof, the roofing company would say, okay, here's a check for $500. Good luck. You know what I mean? So I don't want you to be so enamored by the warranty, because the reality of the United States is that the average life of a roof in the United States is 13 years.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So you'll get more than that. But, you know, remember that the averages, you know, even go into like Hurricane Ida. All those roofs get tied into the averages.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. Okay. Okay, so it's normal to say, hey, we're going to, I just was like, okay, are they going to be using some out of this leftover box?
No. We want brands like GAF or Tamco or Elk or CertainTeed. These are all very good manufacturers of roofing material.
Okay, what about deposits? What's the protocol for?
I mean, if they want a deposit, I would not give them more than 20%.
Oh, okay. I think he was asking for half.
No. If they're a legit company, many of them will come and do it with no deposit.
Oh.
Well, I mean, once they start once they start on the roof and they tear it all off, you know, and you don't pay them, they can put a lien on your home, which, you know, it's, but yeah, 50% is no.
Okay.
Too much.
All right. Rogers and Lindholm. Fantastic.
Have a great day. I appreciate you calling this morning. 7:49 in the morning. We'll take a quick break and be right back. Today is Marianne's birthday. And she is one of these people that loves her birthday. Mm-hmm. And it's usually like a month-long event, you know, and it is one of those birthdays where I think it's one of those birthdays I think where people are like, oh, I'm at this age, but then she realized that she gets all these discounts now when she gets at this age. Like, you save money on your city sticker, and you you know, you pay less on you get all these deals when you go to, so she loves a good deal, right? So you get all these deals. And then I was looking at other things, like fun things to do when you turn 65. Oh, I said the word. She's 65. So this is a list of fun things to do when you turn 65. Catch up on all the movies and TV series you never had time to watch. I think she already does that. Play board games or cards with your spouse or your friends. Participate in a jam session with fellow musicians. Right? I could see you doing that when you turn 65.
Mary.
Right?
Yeah.
How about this? Join a little theater production.
Love it.
Right? How about this one? Play practical jokes on your friends.
Love it.
And then finally, take paint and sip classes.
What's that?
You're painting and you're drinking wine.
Oh, those are fun.
So,
I would do that.
Happy birthday, Marianne. I can't wait for you to get a deal on your Chicago City sticker. We love you. It's so nice that you are in our lives.
Happy birthday.
877-213-4LOU, 877-213-4568. This is Pat calling in. Hey, Pat, good morning. Hello, Pat.
Hello, Pat.
I can hear Pat on the radio. Pat is out getting gas. I think he's getting gas. Pat. All right, I'm going to hang up on Pat, and then I'm going to talk to... is it, let's see, not Pat. I like this name. How about this? I hope he's there. Rodrigo. Hello, Rodrigo.
Hello, sir.
How are you? Good morning.
Good morning to you. Got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Brand new concrete slab. I have a very fine, fine, fine hairline crack. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if I have seen this product that a dentist used to use. You pour it in there and then you seal it with this ultralight thing. Mm. Will it work?
Is this, Rodrigo, is this inside or outside?
Outside.
Yeah, don't do that. Let's do this. When did this...
It's brand new.
I know. Brand new. Like how long? 30 days?
No, let's see. 2 months ago, it's the shoulder or the deck around a pool.
Okay. What I'd rather you do is use a sealer that's going to bond that hairline crack together. If you put anything in that crack, it will discolor, and you'll see it more pronounced than now. I want you to buy a concrete sealer that is also a bonder called Bone Dry.
Bone Dry, got it.
You're going to go to bonedryproducts.com.
Okay.
And it's a gallon of it's like $70, but this is a silicate based sealer, and what it does in particular with this new concrete, it will get absorbed in the top 1-inch layer of the concrete, and it will help bond it all together and keep moisture from getting in or moisture from getting out, and it will help to bond that hairline crack.
And it will absorb it. The crack will absorb it because the liquid is fine enough to go in there, right?
100%.
Oh, great. Bone Dry. Got it.
All right.
Thank you, Lou.
Rodrigo, I appreciate you calling this morning. 877-213-4LOU. We'll take a quick break and be right back. I've often said that I think that you would be a perfect candidate for an electric car. Just because you do a lot of city driving, you know. Mm-hmm. But even if you go to Green Bay to see your in-laws... An electric car could go there, no problem, right? But
what? Yeah. No, what if it gets stranded on the, like, it's just, it, that freaks me out.
Like the battery dies?
Yeah.
Well, you just got to make sure it's charged. I mean, the thing is, I think it's like, you know, with the car, like, oh, the light was on. I said I had 50 miles. You know what I mean? Like, if you're that, are you that kind of person in the car?
Not generally. I've made my mistake before that way.
When do you fill up? Like now. What is the lowest you'll go? Like, do you wait for the light to go on?
I mean, it goes on occasionally. I try to not get to that point.
Yeah.
I usually, whenever I go by Costco, which is usually
the cheap gas, right?
Once a week.
And then you stand in line at the Costco gas station like they're giving the gas away.
I know.
Right?
Well,
it's crazy.
I actually haven't had a line lately, but
no.
Yes, there used to be lines all the time.
Joe Brand, when do you go with the gas in the tank?
See, honestly, I kind of like plan out my week. So if I get to single digits in terms of miles left, I'll think, okay, what do I have tomorrow? Do I have time to fill up tomorrow? Yeah, all right, I'll do it tomorrow. That's,
what did we do before we had no thing like that? How about,
Don? About your gas,
Don,
much,
what do you do,
Joe,
with the gas in the car?
I usually don't really drive much. I just, you know, when the bus driver says, you know, when the bus driver says he's got to fill up, I trust them.
Yeah, I got it. I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. See, when I was in high school, my first car was a Jeep that my father and I built from the ground up. Actually, my dad did, and I just, you know, like held stuff. Need a wrench, Dad? And it was a 1945 Willys Army Jeep. And it did not have a gas gauge. It was pretty cool. Now imagine, I'm driving to school in a 1945 Willys Army Jeep. Took the top off May 1st, didn't put the top back on until October 1st. I'm in high school. If it rained, right?
Who cares?
So it had a 5-gallon jerry can on the back, you know, like they had in the Army. And it was all, that was my spare tank because it didn't have a gas gauge. So you'd put, I think it held like 6 gallons of gas.
Wow.
And you kind of knew when you were driving, oh, I should probably put gas in. But every now and then, you run out of gas. Then you take the 5-gallon jerry can and fill it up and go.
It sounds so mentally peaceful, you know, like to not have to worry about how much gas you have left.
Well, especially when you're 16, you don't really care, right?
Right, so, right, exactly.
Anyway, that was pretty fun. I love that.
I kind of want to go back really quick when you said, well, if you drive around in the city, you're a better candidate for an electric car. Why is that?
Well, because you're not going long distances where you're worried, like, I need to go 300 miles. Will the car get me there?
Right, but are there
if I'm going to the grocery store 10 miles here, 15 miles here, then I get home at night, you know, I maybe only use not even half the battery power,
and I
plug the thing in.
I get that part, but I don't know. I don't know of too many spots where you can charge your car. Maybe I just don't look for it because I don't have that.
No, but my point is you would charge it at home.
Yeah, and but if you live in the city...
Does it have to do with, like, the piston engine, like combustion versus the electric and how often the car
engine
starts?
Oh, you mean, like, you live in a... Right, so you live in a... Like, because you're in a condo.
Right.
Do you have a garage?
Yes.
Well, is there a plug there?
Oh, it's honestly just a plug? I thought it was like a...
There is a version that's just a plug.
Oh, okay.
Like plugging in an extension cord when you're your hedge trimmer.
I'm sorry I didn't know this before I polluted the airwaves with my ignorance.
What's that?
You learned so much here.
I know. You know what? You'll learn even more after 8:30 this morning. 877-213-4LOU. Let's go back to the phone lines. This is Joe calling in from West Chicago. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Lou. How are you?
I'm doing well. How may I help you?
Well, my neighbor went away on vacation, so I was watering his flowers with a wand sprinkler outside. We have wells out here in West Chicago. It was that 3-foot with the shower head on it, and there was lots of air in the line. It would actually push the head back on the sprinkler. And usually, you know, sometimes there's some air in the 50-foot hose, but this was long after that got out of there. Any ideas?
Hmm. Does your neighbor have, is it a frost-proof valve on the side of the house?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe there, you know, so that if it, and does it, is it the one that has like a little plastic cap on the top with an airlock?
Yes.
That could be stuck.
Oh.
So there's a cap.
So just break it, probably a 40 on it, or?
Well, no, because if it's the one with the little plastic cap on top, that little cap comes off, and inside there is like a little, it's almost like a float for a toilet. And it goes up. It goes up and down. And if you took a little screwdriver and kind of articulated it a little bit, if you take the cap off and spray a little lightweight oil, that could help. But you need to articulate a little bit, and I bet that'll solve the problem.
Well, thank you so much. You know, Thursday I was coming back from Wisconsin. I stopped in Sturgeon Bay, and this guy was at Nightingale's. And I heard his name. He's telling his friends, oh, my name's Manfredini. I go, any relation to Lou? He goes, yeah, that's my cousin. This guy's name was Bob Manfredini.
Oh, really? If it's the Bob Manfredini, if it's the Bob Manfredini that I know, yes, he was a cousin of ours. That is true.
Funny.
How about that?
Funny. What a small world.
It is a small world.
Thank you so much. I will try to do that and see if that solves.
You got it. I appreciate you calling this morning. Hey, guess what? It's time now to hear from Lindsay about what's new at Builder Supply Outlet. Mary Beth and I were watching the second season of Ted Lasso, a couple episodes. And you know the woman that owns the team? She's, I forget her name, but she's this very tall, attractive woman, but kind of,
she's muscular.
Yeah. And she's very she's a very talented actress. I mean, I think she's really funny and so very good. And I forget her name, but she's like a British actress who actually spent a lot of time on the London stage.
Hannah Waddingham.
You watch the show, Don?
I do, yeah. The first season. I haven't seen the second yet.
She's so talented, right? Yeah. I mean, I think she's so great. I was watching an episode where she was there talking, and there's a, you know, whatever, a scene going on. And I was looking at the color of her hair. She's not a blonde, and like her roots were dark.
Spot
you know,
those roots.
He's and so then him. I literally for a second I'm going, I could really work that in and get the color all the way through. I really said
little
that.
Email to the Ted Lasso crew.
Yeah, right. I can go to London, you know, wear a mask. Anyway, 877-213-4 Lou. Let's get back to the phone calls. This is Carl in Chicago. Hi, Carl. Hey. You're on House Smarts Radio.
Hey, how you doing, Lou?
Good, sir. What's going on?
Thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I got to mention a happy birthday to Marianne, and I enjoy scones. You were talking earlier.
Yes, she is a lovely woman, and that's so nice of you to say. And the scone recipe originally came from her.
I love a good scone.
How may I help you, sir?
We go back over 25 years when you were quite a bit younger then.
I was. Thank you for pointing that out.
I got several items. I got a family that was having a deck installed, rebuilt.
Okay.
And they've got about a 14-foot diameter on the one end, raised up a step. On the other end, they have, I think it started out 3 steps down, but it's like 2 and a small riser. So I think he changed the level of the lower deck. It's a 16-foot deck, and he pulled off the job. So trying to find out who bends Trex material for these circular areas.
Oh, wow. So do the thermal. So that thermal bending of Trex is a specialty.
Right.
And you have to have the proper equipment. You know, it isn't just something you do with a hairdryer.
That's what I'm looking for, somebody that may do this.
So where is the, Carl, where in Chicago?
The western suburbs.
Okay. So one of the biggest Trex dealers in the Chicagoland area is a company called Harry's Lumber on Chicago's northwest side. And I think they're the largest independent Trex dealer. And so they are pretty connected to some of the premier Trex builders in the area. Now, they're closed on the weekends. They're a legit lumber yard. But if you call them Monday through Friday, you can tell them that we spoke, and perhaps they can make some recommendations on somebody you can call. I mean, nobody likes to step in on a job that somebody pulled off of a job, but, you know, you may have to wait, obviously, to find somebody or like a hole in a schedule type of thing. But that is a specialty for that, and you could certainly try.
Understood.
Go ahead. Well, another thing to try, and I don't know, I know they do Trex decking. I don't know off the top of my head if they do the thermal bending, but DeckTech has now started a carpentry service to build porches and decks. So that, you know, they were in the refinishing business forever and ever and ever. and they launched this carpentry service. Quite frankly, I hired them to rebuild a porch and set of stairs on the front of a rental property that I own in Chicago, and they just finished last week. And to say that I was impressed with the workmanship from the carpenters that came out would be an understatement. And that's really my wheelhouse. I know carpentry more than anything else, and they did a really nice job. I do not know for a fact if they do thermal bending of Trex, but it might be worth a phone call.
Yeah, I can check. Lou, it's unfortunate when somebody does this. The contractor claimed they were unhappy with his work. The problem was he would show up maybe one day a week towards the end.
Right.
And other days he would show up for an hour or two with a couple workers and take off.
Right.
He must have had a lot of jobs going.
Something.
I got another item if you can, can help me with.
Sure.
I'm getting a new air conditioner for the house. And I know you said the contractor is most important. I've had a number of contractors quote this. They can't, half of them quote 2.5 ton, half quote 3 ton. But how do I check out a contractor to see if they've got major problems?
You mean as far as if they've got complaints and reliability?
Yes.
Well, I think you have a couple ways to go. Certainly, you know, there's all kinds of reviews online, whether it's Google or Yelp, and you can certainly check those out. But I will tell you that, you know, more people complain than actually give praise. And so you have to take that with a grain of salt. There's also the Better Business Bureau, which is a non-for-profit organization. It's not a government entity, but you can certainly check that as well. And again, I'm more interested in personal conversations with people about someone's work because as I said, you know, people complain all the time. Oh, whatever, they didn't show up, or you know, whatever it might be. And it isn't, nobody's perfect, of course, but you know, you have to take all of that and then formulate your own idea. When it comes to the sizing issue, make sure that people are doing the proper load calculation to make sure that the size is correct. There's not a huge difference between a 2.5 ton and a 3 ton, but depending on your usage of AC in particular, what you don't want is the house to feel clammy. And that can happen when you oversize a system. You know, we have several HVAC companies that I've heard from a lot of listeners who've been very happy with. Dykstra Home Services is the first one that comes to mind. Perfect Home Services is another company that we've gotten really good feedback from, as well as American Weather Makers, all of which do a really nice job. And, you know, if you got bids from all three of them, then you could decide with whom you're most comfortable working with. You know, I mean, I think that ultimately is, you know, you've got to make a judgment call on who you feel is going to do the best work. But I know between the three of them, they'll all do good work. And then depending on the equipment that they quote and how you feel about the people coming in to see you, you can certainly make those decisions for yourself. And I would not have a problem recommending any one of those companies to come and bid the work for you. Thank you so much for the phone call. All right, when we come back, I talked about the fact that electric vehicles are evolving, and but we got to make sure that the infrastructure is in place if you're going to buy one of these things. I had an interesting conversation with a guy that's pretty knowledgeable in the whole realm of electric vehicles and home charging units. That all comes up after this report of WGN Radio News. I've come to the realization that the next car that I purchase is going to be one. I just think they make a lot of sense. But there are things that we need to know about these vehicles, because the infrastructure, obviously there's a gas station on every corner, in many cases, four gas stations on a corner. But home charging kits and how you do this, there's a little bit to know about that. And I wanted to turn to someone that had a little bit more knowledge than me. Joining me on the phone line is Tom Malagni, who is a writer at Inside EV. He's a senior editor. He's also the host of a YouTube channel show called State of Charge. Tom, good morning and welcome to House Smarts Radio.
Good morning, Lou. Thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about your show that you have on YouTube.
So, yeah, I have a YouTube channel that's dedicated to electric vehicle news, but also really specific charging information. One of the things I realized with people transitioning from conventionally fueled vehicles to electric vehicles was that the biggest question that people had, the biggest concerns was charging. So I thought if I made a YouTube channel that kind of really focused on explaining charging and the different equipment you would use, that it would be popular, and I was right.
And when it comes to the electric vehicles that are being developed, and I know, you know, we have, obviously, we're, I think most of the U.S. is familiar with Tesla, and certainly some of the bigger manufacturers have electric cars. Is the charging, like the actual plug that you put into the car, did they all kind of get together and say, we need to come up with a universal plug so this is easy for everybody, or is it specific to the brands?
Okay, so first off, you'll never get all the auto manufacturers to come together on anything. So,
right, right.
No, that didn't happen. But we kind of have it. And let me explain. There's different types of charging. For the at-home charging and the workplace charging, let's say, that we call that level one or level two charging, which is from regular household electric. For that, in North America, there is a standard that everyone uses except Tesla. We're going to put Tesla on the side for a second because they do everything their own way.
Right.
But the SAE, the Society of Automotive Engineers, came out with a plug called the J1772 connector. And that's what all electric vehicles outside of Tesla use for regular daily charging on either 120-volt or 240-volt charging. Now, when you get into ultra-high speed charging, the water gets a little murky because now we have two different connectors that are used in addition to Tesla using their own connector. Then it gets a little bit more complex.
Okay.
But the one thing I will say, for level one and level two charging with Tesla, Tesla provides a J1772 connector adapter. So their cars, even though they use a different connector, they can use all the charging stations that all the other companies can.
Okay, so I'm gonna let's break this down a little bit. So let's say, let's use me as an example. I am not an electric car owner, and let's say that tomorrow I want to go buy a brand new electric vehicle, and I'm going to say it's, you know, a Chevy to be named later. Is this something that the dealers actually help the purchasers with, or do they say, hey, here you go, give us a big check, and you need to get somebody to mount this in your house?
That's a great question, and it's brand specific. There is no one rule that everyone follows. Now, you mentioned Chevrolet. Chevrolet just is launching a new electric vehicle called the Bolt EUV. And with that, what they said was, we understand charging is difficult and it's an impediment and it's what's holding people back from buying our cars. So what we're going to do is, if you buy this new Bolt EUV, we'll install a charging station at you. We'll give you the charging station and we'll install the plug at your house so you plug it into the wall. So this is what's kind of, it wasn't really in the past. But manufacturers are starting to realize, hey, this is a pain point.
Right.
So we're going to eliminate that, and we'll install it in your house if you buy our car. But right now, Chevrolet is the only one that actually has come out and said they'll do that.
Well, that makes me so happy, because that'll just help us more to see the USA in a Chevrolet. But, okay, so the charging technology, you mentioned that, you know, all the manufacturers are different, but the electricity, the utility that most people, well, really all people have in their homes, is compatible with probably a licensed electrician to connect what people need to charge these cars, correct?
Absolutely. And most of the equipment is plug-in equipment, so it doesn't even need to be hardwired. In most cases, the electrician just has to install an outlet in the garage, a 240-volt outlet, and then the charging equipment will just simply plug into that.
Almost like an electric dryer type of thing.
Exactly like an electric dryer type mm-hmm. thing.
So, and I realize that this is evolving, and you certainly are at the side of the forefront of this. Before we you started talking, you were telling me how you're heading off to Germany to go see the BMW electric vehicles, and then Rivian, that's being built in the Midwest here, is another one that I know I do follow that manufacturer, and they seem to kind of start and stop and hopefully get out there. As these cars roll out, and we talk about fast charging, what currently now, if I'm someone that is, you know, driving, I don't know, 80 miles a day in an electric vehicle, is it safe to assume that with the faster charging, when I get home at night and I plug this thing in, my vehicle will be fully charged in the morning?
Absolutely. In any instance, at home, as long as you can install a 240-volt circuit in your garage or at your home somewhere, your electric vehicle would be fully recharged by the morning all the time. So, you know, at home daily charging, you would just pair the right charging equipment to your vehicle. There's charging equipment that doesn't deliver a lot of power. There's charging equipment that delivers a lot of power. If you had a big battery on your car, so it needs a lot of power, and let's say you drive 150 miles a day or, sure, you know, more than the average person, you would just get a little bit of a more powerful home charging station that could fully charge up your vehicle.
All right, one last question, because this, you know, I certainly believe in the future of electric vehicles, and that more and more of them, more and more of us are going to purchase these things. So let's say I buy that new Chevy that you spoke of, and Chevrolet was kind enough to come and install as part of my purchase this charging unit, and then I have someone pulling up in a Ford electric vehicle. Will that charging unit that's hanging on my wall charge that Ford vehicle?
Absolutely. Any home charging station and charging equipment here in North America, it's different in Europe and China.
Right.
But if you buy it and install it here, you can charge any electric vehicle with it, because they all have, as I mentioned earlier, right, that common J1772 connector that charges all electric vehicles except for Tesla. But if your friend came over with a Tesla, he has a little adapter that he plugs into your connector and he plugs into his car. So, right, yes, you can charge any electric vehicle.
Pretty cool. Tom Malagny is Inside EV senior editor. How do they find stuff that you're writing about and talking about? Where do people go?
So as you mentioned, Inside EVs, I've been writing about electric cars there for nearly a decade now. You can check out just by visiting the website. And also make sure to check out my YouTube channel called State of Charge. There's a lot of really good charging information there. And I try to make it on a level that even the person that isn't a sophisticated electric vehicle aficionado can understand. I try to make it so the average person can understand how to charge their car.
Well, you did a great job today. Thanks, Tom. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Lou.
You're listening to House Smarts Radio. We will take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this.
Hi, Lou. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How may I help you this morning?
Well, we have a problem with, like, diffuser oil. We have a rental property, and we believe they use the diffuser a lot, so the smell is just lingering in there.
And a diffuser, you mean like a, you mean a not like a diffuser, like a hair dryer?
No, like a oil diffuser.
Oh, okay. So, okay.
And it, you walk in the house and the smell just wafts you in the face, and you can feel it actually on you. So we were wondering, are we going to have to paint the whole house again? The carpets are being cleaned right now. Do you have any suggestions?
Well,
for?
So my guess is if it's a diffuser, it's all over the walls and the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would probably do, how big of an apartment is this?
It's a small home, 1,200 square feet.
Oh, it's a home. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Central heat and air?
Yes.
It's in there, too. So a couple things. I'd probably, boy, the oil residue is going to be tough on the ductwork, but I'd probably get the ductwork cleaned, and then I would wash all the walls and ceilings with a solution of spick and span and warm water.
Okay.
They still make spick and span,
right,
and it still works, and it will break down that oil. Like, are the walls and stuff in decent shape? Like, does it need to be repainted or no?
No, they really don't need to be repainted. We were just afraid that the smell would be in there and we couldn't get it out.
Yeah, I would start with the washing of the walls and then see, you know, hey, it's much better now that we did that. You know what I mean? And but it's probably in the ceiling as well. And so the what would make your life easier, are you going to do this yourself?
No, I'll have somebody do it.
Okay. Well, then have them wash it down with warm water, spick and span, ceilings, walls, whatever. Stay out of it for a day and then come back into it and see what you think. If all of a sudden the smell is still there. Rust-Oleum makes an odor-killing primer that is clear. That is clear, goes on like a milky white, and you can put it right over the paint that's there, and it will create a coating. But it's clear, so the color will stay through, and it should help to eliminate the odor entirely once you clean the walls first. But you have to clean the walls first. You can't apply this to it without doing that, because the oil residue will keep the the paint from sticking.
Oh, all right.
Okay?
Sure.
Good luck.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for all the tips.
You got it. I appreciate you calling. Thank you so much. 877-213-4-LOU. This is Jan in Palatine. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Lou.
How may I help you?
Well, I have fiberglass front doors, and they're plastic-framed fake stained glass. And I also have glass storm doors on there. It faces south, and the plastic frames kind of melted, and the glue's dripping down because it gets really hot in there. What can I do to repair that? And it also smells bad because whatever is in there.
Wait, so there's a storm door that covers this?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's super problematic because it's not. They just weren't designed for that, and you're not going to. Is it a full light storm door?
Yes. I like having the privacy.
So it's got.
If I open the door.
So. I see. So then you and then you lock the door.
Yeah. I know if I put. A screen there, it would probably solve some of the issue.
Right, but
in the meantime, it's just really gross because the glue.
Right. So the glue. Down. So with the glue, I mean, to clean that up, just use a razor scraper to clean it all up, and clean the glass as best you can. But the problem is, it's just going to continue to happen because of the heat buildup. Now, you know, with the full glass, I mean, if we could vent that space somehow and not get it so hot, that would be helpful, but then you'd have to, you know, you probably have a, no, there's no way to do this without changing the full light screen. You're kind of stuck in the fact that you like having the door when it's, you know, it sounds like when the temperatures are more pleasant, you like to have the door open so you get the light in there, but then you have the security of the closed door, correct?
Right. Correct.
Which is why you don't want the screen, because it'll just run through the screen. I mean, not that you're worried about people running through the screen, but a screen and ventilating the space would help. But other than that, there's that heat buildup inside there will just continue to happen. You could put a film on the glass to tint it. That would lower the heat gain a little bit, but you would have then a tinted piece of glass.
Okay.
3M makes a do-it-yourself tint kit that you could take that glass panel out and put it on like a outdoor table and lay it down, clean the glass and put it on there. It's pretty easy to do. And you'd cut it with a razor knife all the way around there, and now you've got this tinted glass, which would probably...
And that would cut some of the heat?
It'd cut a lot of the heat. I mean, it probably would reduce the heat gain by... maybe 25%. And you know, it would look tinted, but you could still look out of it, no problem. It wouldn't be you could still tell that someone's in there, or you could look outside type of thing. Not like a blackout window, but maybe consider doing something like that. But clean up the doorway and everything with the utility knife and then go from there. Appreciate the phone call. You want me to do line three now? Or would you like me to take a break? Let's do line three. Come on. I'll do line three. Come on, because you wanted me to do line three. This is Janelle. Janelle in Woodstock. Hi, Janelle.
Hi. How you doing, Lou?
How may I help you?
I am tired of high ComEd bills, and I'm wondering if you have any recommendations for effective solar panels or some way to, I don't know, just save some money on our bills.
turn all the lights off and never use your air conditioner. Thank you for calling.
Or the fuel pump, right?
Look, the solar panel thing is awesome, but it will not provide 100% of your power. And it, on average, it will take 10 years to pay for the installation.
Oh, my gosh.
So what is your, what's your plan for this house? Janelle in Woodstock is going to be there how long?
The rest of my life, I'm hoping. It's a ranch.
Okay.
I'm preparing.
Okay. Well, if the rest of your life is the next 25 years plus, young girl like you.
Sounds good.
All right. So then it might be worth looking into. I don't have a direct solar company that I can send you to, but there are tons of different options out there. There's a bunch of tax credits that exist in Illinois to help you install this. You're probably looking at a total cost of about $30,000 to do something like this, and it will probably provide you with 50% of the electricity that you use. So now when you put that against the ComEd bills, are we better off putting everything to LED lights, buying high-efficiency appliances inside the home, putting the most energy-efficient air conditioner and heating system that you can, which all of that will probably cost you $30,000. So it's like you got to put a pencil to a paper to see, and I do think that long term, you know, remember, solar is not like a forever thing that you got to maintain it. You got to keep them clean. Solar panels, you know, they do go bad. And so it's not just something like you put it in and you forget about it. So it really is a pencil to paper thing to make sure that it makes the most sense for you long term and how you're spending that money. Thanks so much for the phone call. Ooh, I am so late. Quick break.
Hey, Lou, how are you this morning? Really good show.
Thank you. How may I help you, sir?
Listen to you every Saturday morning on my buds while I'm cutting the lawn. I always wonder who else is listening while I'm cutting the grass.
That's great. That's awesome. What's going on?
Yeah. So last winter, remember when we got all that snow and it piled up 2, 3, and 4 feet high even?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I had about 2.5 feet that I let pile up on my porch, and I just used the front door to come and go. Figured I'd just let it melt away. That was a big mistake. Come the spring, I walked outside one day and found the porch had buckled and bowed, and now the wood is a bit soft and buckles every time we get a decent rain. So what I did was I bought a gallon of the Semco water membrane and a tarp of that garage grip to put over it. What do you think?
This is a second floor porch.
No, it's a backyard. It's raised, you know, that comes in, you know, to the back door.
And
it's 8x8 wood.
But and there's a roof over the top of it or no?
Yeah, there's a roof over it, yeah.
And it's what you're walking on that's soft.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, whatever you put over the top of it, I mean, you're still going to have this, you know, potentially structurally compromised, members of wood and stuff like that underneath there. So,
right.
I mean, it'll buy you a little time, but it actually could make it worse and then have it be a bigger problem for you when the winter comes again and then next spring.
Well, that's why I got the garage grip. I thought I'd treat it with the Semco water membrane.
Right.
And then put the... Are you familiar with the garage grip, Lou?
Yeah, yeah, I am.
Okay.
But it's
got a rubber packing, so it's waterproof.
Right, but it, right now, if I walk on top of this surface, is it a round-edge decking that we're walking on, or is it a fur floor tongue and groove?
It's wood. It's wood. It was the treated wood when I had it rebuilt about 10 years ago.
Right, but are there gaps in the wood? Like, is it decking?
Yeah, when it gets hot, there are gaps, and when it gets cold, you know, when it gets hot, it expands.
So there's no gaps.
I'm sorry,
so it's the opposite.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm sorry. Exactly right. Yeah.
Okay, but when you're walking on this, and what's soft is not the decking, it's the framing underneath it?
No, it's, you know, I shouldn't say it's really soft. It's when I put the wood screws in it, you know, to when it gets hot out, the buckles go down and it's normal again. So I got some wood screws to screw in there so the planks wouldn't come up.
Okay.
And it was, when I was putting the screws in, the wood felt a little bit soft.
When you put this, the garage grip and everything over the top of that, you're going to create a barrier to make it get even hotter. And so I think that what you're going to find is if that decking is already moving up and down, it's going to continue to move up and down if you put something over the top of it. So what it sounds like to me is there may be some compromise in the framing underneath it, that the screws are not holding, because maybe there's a little bit of rot in the framing at the top edge, like that top 1 inch. Maybe what you try is buying longer coated screws. You know, like they have these screws that have like a Torx or a star bit on the end of it that you can buy like a 3 inch long coated screw and go and drive deeper into the framing to try and pull the wood down in there. I'm fine with you restaining it all and doing all that. That's great. But the garage grip over the top of it, I think, will cause more problems for you.
Yeah. More problems. I don't understand. It will prevent any rain or moisture from getting to the wood, so it'll protect it that way.
But it'll be a topping that's almost like a blanket. Right? And so it's got to expand and contract. And if you're going to use a semi-transparent stain on that decking, I would rather that just be exposed and that's it.
What do you think of the Semco water membrane? You recommended it a few months back, and I wrote it down.
But that water membrane, that's the sheet good?
I ordered. It's a liquid. I'm not sure. I'm imagining it's like a latex, you know, oil-based paint. Only it's completely waterproof.
Is it Semco or is it? I've talked about the Ames product, but not. I don't remember recommending the Semco product.
Oh, okay.
I don't think that's me. I don't think that's me. If it's a waterproof membrane, okay?
Yeah.
If that's what they're calling it, meaning that you're going to put this over the top of the wood, you're now going to... That's the thing that concerns me most about this. If it's a waterproof membrane, it's going to create this, like a layer over the top. I don't want to say a varnish, because you said it's semi-transparent. But that will certainly keep moisture off of there, but ultimately, whenever you get membranes, or that term, where it's a top coat like floor wax, my experience has been is that stuff has peeled, and then it traps dirt and it makes it worse. If the wood, if the wood itself is in decent shape, when you look at it, it's not overly checked, it's not overly cracked, it sounds like there's some separation, and maybe it's be solved by deeper screws. I would rather you use, my opinion, a semi-transparent deck stain that has a color that soaks in, does give you protection with water, but it's not a membrane. It doesn't, the wood will still allow, the finish will still allow water to be absorbed. And the trick there with any semi-transparent is you have to sand the wood first, because if you don't, you don't open up those fibers, it doesn't soak in. So it may be that you heard about this product in a different show, maybe the show that's on after me. Not that it's maybe not. I mean, it could be a good product. That would not be one that I recommend or that I have used in the past. So I've always been a semi-transparent deck stain guy, and it has worked for me for, you know, 30 plus years. And so that's what I'm sticking with. Thanks so much for the phone call. 9:20 in the morning. Quick break, and we'll be back right after this.
You. Don't drag me
I called him out. His mom is a listener. Thank you, Mrs. Offerman. She's lovely. And so she called her son and said, how come you're not talking to that nice guy in WGN Radio?
You're right, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I know my way around. Mm-hmm. You always want to meet somebody's mother.
I don't know if that's how it went exactly, but he did
better for the story. It's better for the story. It's better for the story. Don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. Right? Come on.
Right.
We all know that.
Totally.
877-2134-LOU. Let's see if we can help out Annie, who's calling in from Vernon Hills. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Lou. Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Love your show.
Thank you.
So there appears to be a drain fly infestation in my home. I was first noticing them just in the master bathroom area. So I tried pouring down the Green Gobbler enzymatic drain cleaner, tried the drain snake to undo any clog possible. I tried pouring boiling water, making homemade fly traps. Nothing is working. And now I'm noticing them even outside of the bathroom now. Like, there are random ones in the bedroom, like a couple in the kitchen and living room downstairs. So I wonder if I have a greater problem. Is there anything else that I could try that I haven't already tried?
Sounds like a party at your house.
Not okay. A party I want to invite you.
Okay,
to.
Let's do this. Now, the master bathroom, you're mostly noticing this in the tub or in the vanity?
Both.
Okay. And is it a tub or is it a shower base?
Shower.
Okay. I want you to take the cover off the shower base. Okay. So whatever the grate is on the shower base, I want you to take that off. And I want you to, okay. And then into the vanity, I want you to take the pop-up off of there. Have you ever done that before?
No.
Okay, so the drain cover on your shower, it either pops off or there may be a couple screws that you see there that you can loosen to take that grate off. The pop-up...
It pops right off.
Oh, it does. Okay, so pop that off.
The shower pops right off.
All right, so that pop that off. And then in the bathroom vanity, where the lever goes up and down to make that pop-up go, if you grab the pop-up and it doesn't come out, then there's a rod on the tailpiece that comes off of the sink that you have to loosen with your fingers. You pull the rod out. The pop-up comes out. You put the rod back in and tighten it back up. Because if you don't, water will leak out of that part. Okay? You're okay. Going to buy a tube brush if you don't already own one at the hardware store.
Okay.
Did you ever have any babies?
No.
Okay. Well, you know baby bottles, like a baby bottle cleaner?
Yeah,
sort of like that, but it's longer.
Okay.
It's more aggressive. But anyway, you're going to take that brush, you're going to shove it in those drains, and you're going to pour about a quarter cup of Pine Sol right over the top of that brush. And you are going to scrub the side walls of the drain above the trap. So the trap is what holds the water so you don't smell the stinky drain. They're living on the side of the drain. And when you pour stuff down in the bottle water, whatever, it goes right by it and the gunk is still there and then they grab it. We're scrubbing the inside of that pipe. The soap scum and the hair and all the other kind of stuff that gets stuck there, that's where the drain flies are living. And once you clean that all up, you're going to solve this problem. And you may want to do this in all the drains in the house.
Okay.
And you will solve the problem.
Okay, that sounds great. I will give it a shot. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I appreciate you calling this morning. 877-2134-LOU is our phone number. I just looked at the number you wanted me to go to, and I thought you were giving me the number one sign. Hi, Denise. You're in Northlake.
Hi, Mr. Lou. I have a question that I'm sure you could help me with. I'm looking for a one-piece rubber roof. I do have an existing rubber roof that's in sections, and I've heard this is better.
What is better?
A piece.
It is for
residential area.
Wait. I don't understand your question. You have a rubber roof.
Yes, that's old. That needs to be redone. And I'm looking for someone that could do a one-piece rubber roof
Okay. All right. So how big of an area are we talking?
It's a small family room. It's not. Okay. I'm not sure. Maybe... I'm not sure on that. It's not very big, though.
Okay. Well, so the one piece systems that you talk about, like one such manufacturer is called Sarnafil, which I believe is the roofing material that's on the United Center. And it's like a giant rubber, heavy rubber material that is it's not one piece on the United Center. They actually weld seams together. It looks like it's one piece, but it's not. But in a situation like what you have, depending on the layout of the roof, many times those roofs require ballast, meaning that they have to put pebbles on top of it to hold it in place. Now, I don't know that that's the case for what you're doing, but but most any roofing contractor can do these roofs, and you can ask them to bid this out. You're in North Lake, so I mean, I talked about a couple of roofing contractors. We have Rogers Roofing and Lindholm Roofing. Both of them could do the one piece. There is some additional flashing that has to occur and things like that, that have to be done to do a one-piece system, depending on the weight of it all. But if that's what you would like to do, then go right ahead. It may or may not be more expensive. I'm not really sure. It depends on what has to happen underneath the roof. But a regular rubber bitumen roof that they torch down is pretty effective, and when it's done well, you know, there's not a lot of leaking. So, I mean, I would probably just have them bid it both ways so you can kind of see the difference between the products, but certainly one piece with no seam, then all you have to worry about is the flashing details to make sure that it doesn't leak. Thanks so much for the phone call. Hey, when we come back after WGN Radio News, we're going to do our Just Text Me segment. You can send us text messages at 877-2134-LOU. But right now, it's time for news. Do you have some text messages that we can answer this morning, or are you trying to get them as we speak? 877-2134-LOU.
You have a lot of them.
Okay. How about all the nice text messages about people worried about my daughter, Mallory? That's so nice. And I mentioned earlier, she moved to New Orleans, and she's fine. She's safe in Atlanta, still does not have power. And so many of you were so kind to check in on us. So thank you.
That
That's very
so
sweet.
Sweet.
Very sweet.
And the cats are okay.
Oh, yeah. She's fostering some cats.
Sweet girl. She's got such a good heart.
She goes, yeah, the room kind of smells. I go, because you have cats.
That are pooping in it.
All right.
Can squeaking floors be unsqueaked?
Well, sure. I mean, it depends on the type of floor. If it's a floor with carpeting, like wall-to-wall carpeting, and it's just a subfloor underneath there, then probably the best thing to do is to pull the carpeting back and expose the subfloor and look to see where the plywood meets the floor joist. And then, using deck screws, you can try driving where the spot may be squeaking, drive some screws, multiple screws in that area, to tighten up the floor, and that could help. The other thing is, if it's an exposed, so if that same scenario exists where maybe you have a basement below where you can see the joist above you open, many times what happens is without the proper bridging, and bridging is it can be metal or it can be wood, it's blocks of wood that are placed between the joist because as you step on long joists on a floor plate, they can actually move side to side, and that's where some of the squeaking can come from. If you add additional blocking to tighten up that floor on the bottom side of the framing, that can help to eliminate the squeak. And finally, if it's a hardwood floor, you know, the areas where you have squeaking, you could try face nailing with some trim nails to tighten up the floor there. Or what I tell people all the time, like a 50-50 chance you have is to spread baby powder over an area where the floor is. Take a block of wood, wrap it in a rag, and then use a hammer, like a baby sledgehammer would be the best thing to do. And you want to tap firmly, not like swinging a hammer like you're driving a spike into a rail on a train tracks, but really kind of tap to work the baby powder in between the tongues and the grooves to lubricate that area and see if that lessens the squeak. And then you just take a damp rag and wipe the powder up after that, and you may be successful.
All right, next. Lou, how do you remove grease stains from our barbecue on our paver bricks?
If they've been there a long time, you're going to be hard-pressed to get them all out. What I would do there is use some powdered detergent with warm water and a scrub brush or a nylon scrub brush on the end of the drill, like a drill brush, scrub it, work it into a pasty froth and let it sit there for half an hour, scrub it again and then rinse it. That's as good as it's going to get. If the stains still aren't great, you may be successful pulling up those blocks and flipping them over 180. The coloration will be a little bit different, but the grease stains will be gone. And then after that, use a grill pad underneath the grill so that this doesn't happen again. How about one more?
Lou, I have a quartz countertop in my kitchen. There's a seam that after 2 years is really showing. Is there anything I can do to make it less noticeable?
So the seam on the quartz, typically what they'll do is they have an epoxy that they use to pull that all together, and the epoxy matches the quartz. If you know who the installer was, or you know who put it in, or even the manufacturer of the product, you might be able to buy that directly from there and do it yourself, or the person that put it in may have a service tech that can come out and put that all in and blend it all in together. That's our Just Text Me segment.
Oh, wait, I have one quick one. This is just from a nice lady. Hi, Lou, try this. Toast high-fiber bread, peanut butter it while hot, drizzle a little honey over it with a cup of English breakfast tea. Heaven.
Really?
That does sound pretty good.
What kind of bread?
What kind of bread? I wonder. High fiber.
I like that really grainy bread.
I'm a fan of that too for breakfast.
The grainy bread that like you can. It's almost not crunchy, but you feel the texture when you're biting it. You know, Lindsay, you love bread.
I do
Joe,
love bread.
And Joe loves the bread, and Don loves the potatoes. My little cinnamon stick.
Weird.
Really good. What's weird? Grainy bread? I love grainy. Me and Joe like grainy bread.
Grainy bread.
Cinnamon stick. Like, this is your new thing with Don now.
And now
only you use it.
And now into the WGN newsroom with my little cinnamon stick, Don Kleppen.
Oh, my.
Think
but
Brad,
I haven't heard Don like comment on it. He's kind of just like,
I think Brad Pitt's getting jealous.
Oh, my God. I mean, when you look as good as Don, I mean, who doesn't want to be a little cinnamon stick? 877-2134-LOU. Am I talking to Trudy? Trudy, who's in Warrenville. Hi, Trudy.
Well, hi, Lou. I listen to you all the time. I've called before.
You're so kind, Trudy. How may I help you this morning?
I bought a dishwasher, and it doesn't make a sound, but the program runs for 3.5 hours before you can open it. Is this common because of the water usage?
I mean, they do. 3.5 hours is a long time. Is there a short cycle for it?
There is.
Have you tried?
I haven't used.
Yeah,
I mean the
unit that we have, I think it's 2 hours and 40 minutes is the full cycle. And I mean,
well, I couldn't open the door for another 30 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Try the short. I mean, how many people live in your home?
Me.
Yeah. So try the short. Here's what I'll tell you, and I've given this advice before. If you're going to do the short cycle and you want to get the most out of it, run the hot water out of your kitchen faucet until it's hot and then turn your dishwasher on short cycle. Now we're getting the hottest water into that dishwasher right away. Part of it with normal cycle like that, it's heating the water, which can take time. But if you put hot water in it, it senses it's already hot. And it may still heat it a little more, but it takes less time because, you know, the water coming in is already 100 degrees or plus.
And gotcha.
Many times, if you do the hot water in right away, the short cycle will clean your dishes and glasses and everything perfectly.
I mean, it's quiet. I didn't even know it was running except for the light.
Right. I love that.
Yes. Good. One more question.
Sure.
Just real quick.
Sure.
My refrigerator, I'm adjusting temperatures, but it seems to be dampish. My carton of milk, any glass jar that's in it. Getting old?
How old is it?
20 years.
Try taking the toe kick off the front. Chances are the coils are down at the bottom. And I bet if you put like a brush in there to clean out the coils and a vacuum cleaner, and that would probably help. If that doesn't do it, okay, then let's defrost the unit. Let's turn it off, unplug it, take everything out, put it in a cooler, give it at least 6 hours with the doors open, and then plug it all back in. And if that doesn't work, you're going to get a new refrigerator to go with your new dishwasher.
Yeah, because I'm Italian, you know the freezers.
Most important, of course. Where are we going to put the sarcic? Right, we got to have that. We got to have the freezer for the sarcic.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Trudy. I appreciate you calling. It's 9:47 in the morning. We'll take a quick break and be right back.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. What's going on?
We just had a wood deck put on our house, and I was just curious as to how long we should wait before we stain it.
What was it made of?
Womanized lumber.
And do you know if it was kiln dried wood?
I'm not positive.
All right, let's double check. If it was kiln dried wood, then you could wait a couple weeks and do it. If it was not, I'd almost wait until November to do it.
Oh, okay.
And then when
it is something that we could do this year, then.
Correct. We just need, it doesn't, you know, it just needs to be, you know, not freezing, and you're going to use a semi-transparent deck stain. But I need it to dry out a little bit. And right before you stain it, you know, clean it, make sure it's not dirty, and maybe just lightly sand, like with a sponge sander, just the flat surfaces, just to open up the grain a little bit, and then use my favorite deck stain, which is Penofin semi-transparent oil-based stain. But late October, early November, you should be good to go. Thanks so much for the phone call. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this. 877-213-4-LOU is the phone number, and Char was going to be our last caller. You think you got her right there? Let's try one more time. Hey, Char, are you there? Morning.
Good morning. Hello.
Yeah, how can I help you?
My house was built in the 1950s, and I have done some of it myself, but there's popcorn ceiling.
Right.
It's been painted several times, so spraying it with water isn't working. Can I have that skim coated?
The skim coating, it will take forever to skim coat that system. What I would do is sand it. And if the spraying with water and scraping isn't going to work, but I think that if you got in one section and you got behind it and then you sprayed it, it would start to come down. But are you going to do this or have someone do it?
I was planning on doing this, but I might have someone do it.
I would highly recommend if you're going to do it, you get something called a baker's scaffold. That way you can work off of it off the top. Spray it, scrape it, spray it, then skim coat it. Trying to skim coat it like that won't work for you. Thank you so much for the phone call. Thanks for listening, everybody. Lindsay, Joe, Don, my little cinnamon stick, and Bob Ferguson. Have a great weekend, everybody.